we go beyond our company and work with the industry, because we know that in the sustainability field, to make things happen, we have to work together. We all win or lose this race together.
We got good at having honest conversations. To do that, you have to create a safe space and you have to create some common understanding of what we are looking for and what we're not looking for.
The collaborative element needs a long-term approach to it, which is often quite difficult in an organizational environment where short-term results are prioritized.
Those were our guests at our recent roundtable, Collaboration, What Works? Sandrine Ricard, Deputy Director, Sustainability and Responsibility with Pernod Ricard in the UK, Michael Solomon, founder of Responsible 100, and Sarah Jane Littleford, Head of Responsible Business, Global Delivery at Fujitsu. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leadership for Sustainability Roundtable and Podcast. I'm Ogbert Lancaster. I'm a longtime sustainability consultant and facilitator and co-founder of Sustainability Leadership Specialists, Realize Earth.
I'm Morag Watson. I'm a sustainability leadership expert, and I specialize in public policy, particularly around renewable energy. And I'm a co-founder of Realize Earth. And we've created the Sustainability Leadership Roundtables that we've invited you all to today to go alongside our podcast, because we know that it's really valuable not just to listen to us and the guests that we have the podcast, but to actually have a chance to discuss the issues that we've been talking about, so we can share our experiences and so we can learn from each other. So that's why we've got you all together. And the topic for this session is collaboration, what works?
Yeah, so just to set the scene a little bit, here are the key points from the podcast. I really like the idea of collaboration as an inquiry. It's about problem findings, about getting people together to work together to say, well, what is the problem we're really trying to tackle? And then if you found the problem, well, how do we actually solve it? As an inquiry, working together to work out how do we solve this problem together? And then I think this is very often where a lot of people think about collaboration is like the project exists and now we've got to deliver it. Collaboration as delivering the solution. But unless it's a very simple project, those aren't just following steps A, B, and C. Things evolve and change. So again, it's an inquiry on the go. How do we deliver this solution? How do we respond to what's happening to keep that all going in the best way? And then in the podcast, I go in a lot to the specific qualities and skills that are really important. A lot of that, you can sort of boil down to some almost like assumptions that as professionals we can adopt when we think about collaboration. And just to recognize really that collaboration is simply about working together. Very often we think about collaboration as being a sort of a very particular set of project management skills and techniques and tools, but actually we're doing it all the time. It's us working together to achieve a shared goal. And the other thing to recognize is that actually working together to achieve a shared goal is a fundamental human skill. We are social animals. We have these skills where it's innate to some extent. It's very often been sort of trained out of us at school or at university or by the workplace, where it's focusing on the individual. But if we can reclaim that, we can collaborate better. And then the other thing I think which is really important here is, because we're social animals, people actually want to work together effectively. They want to come together to do stuff that matters. And we've got a huge advantage as sustainability people that when we do bring people together, we're bringing them together to work on stuff that is important. And people want to be part of that. And my experience is that when people are resistant to collaborating, it's generally because they've had bad experience of working in collaborations in the past. So that's an opportunity, I think, as a mindset to inviting people into something that's going to be worthwhile and make a difference. I was thinking, what could you do differently tomorrow to make your collaboration better, to work together better? Stuff that doesn't involve going on a training course and whatever. What could we just do differently? There are three sort of highlights here. Probably the most important skill for sustainability leaders across all dimensions and domains is deep listening, really listening to what the other person is saying. We spend so much time normally, and we're trained almost to sort of listen, but actually to be thinking about how we're going to respond, what we're going to throw back at that person, how we're going to try and get them to do what we want, rather than really listening. So listening deeply, and then, because it's so easy to make assumptions, checking that you understand. So you're trying to do this, you want to achieve that. And they say, no, it's not that, it's this. So really checking in so you really know what people are trying to achieve, where they're coming from, what matters to them. And then the second aspect here is it's about allowing people to disagree. The sort of the hierarchies and power structures we have, very often people feel they can't go against the grain of the meeting. They can't speak up. They can't say things that make them stand out. So as sustainability leaders trying to promote collaboration, it's about how do we allow people to disagree, encourage them to disagree. The other aspect here is about disrupting normal patterns and normal places of behavior. We've been trained to behave in certain ways in meeting rooms, to behave in certain ways in a boardroom, to talk about certain things and not talk about other things, not to discuss how something makes us feel, for example, or not to bring in stuff that's outside of what appears to be the professional box or outside of what's on the agenda. So hugely important for collaboration is to break those sort of patterns, to disrupt them, meeting and working in other places outside of the usual meeting rooms, boardrooms, whatever, getting outside on walking meetings or going out and having sort of away day type events in other sorts of places can be really, really powerful in building the sort of trust and deep listening and mutual understanding and creating the space for new ideas and collaborations to evolve.
So as Osbert said, often we're encouraged in the workplace just to jump straight in and start discussions without any thinking time. That's not the most helpful. So what I'm going to encourage us to do right now is just slow down a little bit before we go into discussion and just take some time to have a think about collaboration that you've been involved in at some point in the past, or maybe you're involved in it right now, and think about the ones that have been successful and choose just one of them. Don't try and think of them all at the same time, but too much to hold in your head. So choose a successful collaboration that you've been involved with, that you and your colleagues were all working on successfully together. Once you've chosen it, have a think about it and think about what was the situation, who else was involved, what was the place, and if it helps you visualize, there you were with your colleagues in that place, do feel free to close your eyes. And then think about how did it start, what happened, and what was the result. How were you and your colleagues working together? How did you feel about that working together? And did your feelings change at different times? And then once you've got that feeling in your head and you can picture it, and you can remember the feelings and what it was like, then is to ask yourself a question, why? Why did you work together so well? What was it that made that happen? What were the key things that if you were going to do a successful collaboration again, you would say, yes, those things. That's what we need to build into future collaborations. Okay, hopefully now you've got those thoughts and feelings in your head. Hang on to them, because that's what we're going to take into the next discussion part of this. So, would anyone like to start us off?
Well, I guess I could start.
Please do, Sandrine.
To start with, I didn't pick a specific collaboration because my job is entirely about collaboration. I work in the sustainability area, so our team works with pretty much everyone within the company to integrate sustainability throughout the company. So we deal with different types of expertise with a diversity, I would say, of opinions as well. And that is even more enriching in terms of making projects happen. I would say we also, as part of collaboration, adopt a test and learn attitude, because it's all about improving what it is that we do. So that's pretty much, I'd say, working with all the departments. And it even go further to say that we go beyond our company and work with the industry, because we know that in the sustainability field, to make things happen, we have to work together. We all win or lose this race together. And going back to that feeling, it definitely feels good to be working together because we're all going in the same direction. To give an example of a collaboration, we tested a new technology within the Scotch whiskey industry. and opened it up to the rest of the industry as open source for everyone else to learn from our project and for them to be able to accelerate in that field as well.
So can I just dig a little bit deeper here? So you talked a lot about the context and so on, but when your collaborations go really well, what is it that is enabling that to happen? What are the conditions you've created or the things that you and your colleagues are doing that allow that collaboration to be successful?
Well, there has to be the will already to work together. I think a clear one is the diversity of opinions, of angles. So we challenge each other in terms of making the business case. So those would be two critical ones for me.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
How about either Sarah Jane or Michael?
Thanks, Morag. I think very similar to Sandrine, my experience as a sustainability professional is that we have to be collaborative as a foundation, because otherwise we just won't get anything done. But I think there's two really important elements as part of that. One is time. Time not only to establish the relationships that make collaboration successful, but also time for that collaboration to evolve. So you can't just have a sort of one and done approach. The collaborative element needs a long-term approach to it, which is often quite difficult in an organizational environment where short-term results are prioritized. The other one, and I'd be really interested in your thoughts on this, is thinking about having, I don't want to say leader, but maybe enabler, having one person or a set of persons whose role it is to kind of keep the collaboration on track, to make sure that you are continuing to go towards the goals that were the objective. So I think quite often collaborations can evolve in a different direction, perhaps the wrong direction. Or if you have some very strong personalities, they can tend to take control and then you don't get the successful outcomes that you want. I find that quite challenging though, because collaboration and leader can be seen as perhaps a little bit of tension in there.
I would perhaps offer in convener, sort of between leader and collaborator. But Michael, chance for you to come in.
Yeah, I think I aligned with Sandrine in that, you know, it's a sort of everything that we do. What we did with the Responsible 100 from 2012 for about 6 years was we ran 57 roundtable workshops of 3 hours each in the boardrooms of UK PLC and were generally about 30 people. And we brought together the NGOs and the campaign groups who were expert on these various social, environmental, and ethical issues, together with the businesses that wanted to, work out how they performed on these issues and how they measured up. Our experience was, if you put the businesses in the room and have a conversation, they'll all conclude that they're all great at this thing. If you've got the NGOs and the campaign groups there, they sort of keep them honest and like, you know, we know that you don't perform well on this, and here are some of the poor practices that are in the world, and we think that some of you pursue some of these practices. So it helps us broker an honest conversation. For the NGOs, it was like, here are the businesses that want to tell the truth, that want to be held to account. So that was an interesting sort of exercise, and sometimes it went really, really well. Most of the time it went well. Sometimes there was a row and it was difficult, but only on one or two occasions out of 57. Now, what we're trying to do the same thing online and probably with smaller companies and find out what are the most important issues and how do businesses currently respond and perform and can they improve? And we want the NGOs and the campaign groups to be here to keep them honest and to provide their critical friending and to also better understand the challenges and the limitations that businesses have. Stuff is not easy. Being in business is not easy. Being in business and being profitable and as sustainable and responsible as possible, that's, you know, the most difficult combination.
So, Michael, that's really fascinating. I'd love to get more into that project. Let's just take us back to this collaboration bit. I'm really interested in that huge amount of experience that you will have built up with running all those workshops you did with those NGOs and the board members. And then you said most of them were really successful. Some didn't work. Can you put a finger on what it was that was the magic, the fairy dust or whatever, or the hard work, the graft beforehand? What was it that made the difference between those workshops going really well and them going less well?
I think one of the most important things was setting the rules, setting the context, and making a safe space. You know, we don't want businesses that are going to turn up and try and greenwash the room. And we got good at having honest conversations. So to do that, you have to create a safe space and you have to create some common understanding of what we are looking for and what we're not looking for. So I think that was really important. And then to get started in the right way, you've carefully started this call. And I think that's worth doing. I appreciate that. And I think that was also really important for us. Our first few roundtables were slightly chaotic. After 57, we got quite good at it. It went wrong where people were not really up for it. The biggest row I remember was looking at executive remuneration, executive pay. And we had executive pay consultants in the room. And we had big businesses and we had a number of NGOs that campaign on executive pay. And the one that went really wrong was when the pay consultant just couldn't accept any responsibility for his role in inflate executive pay. That's what the evidence was. That's what the business has admitted. And he just couldn't bring himself to acknowledge any of that and got very defensive.
This is making me think. I've got you and Sarah Jane side by side on my screen here. And I'm sort of thinking, you know, there's Sarah Jane talking about, you know, what's really important is that long-term thing, the time that's needed to build all the trust in advance and so on. And then the time needed for the collaboration to actually take place. And you're running these three-hour workshops. It's a really limited time. I'm guessing a lot of the people in the room have come together and met for the first time. So a really different context. But I guess there's probably some commonalities there in terms of like creating that safe space and so on. So let me come back to some of that. Morag, you're making sort of waving signs with your pen.
Well, I'm really interested in hearing what people were saying there. And a couple of words I was going to pick up on that are coming through. So Sandrine was saying about how important it was in your collaboration to have that challenge in the room and being able to challenge each other. And then hearing Michael talk about how important that challenge was. But you said a very useful word there, Osbert, of trust. There has to be trust within the room. And Michael, you specifically said safe space as well. And it sounds to me, I don't want to assume, but where it went wrong for you, there wasn't that level of trust and safe space for the consultants. So I'm interested on how much we trust people in the room. It's not often something we talk about openly in a business context. But Sarah Jane, I can see you nodding at this one. Have you experience of this one?
In our Sustainability Leadership Manifesto, I argue that we need to get beyond the current focus on net zero. We need to develop and deliver initiatives that offer multiple benefits for people and nature. Initiatives that reduce carbon emissions, help us adapt to climate change, enable nature to recover and regenerate, enhance well-being, and increase the resilience of people, organisations and society. But how do you actually do that? How do you bring colleagues with you? What frameworks are helpful? This is the topic of our next roundtable on Wednesday, the 3rd of April. Whether you have experience to share or are looking for examples to learn from, or both, you're invited. The roundtable, Getting Beyond Net Zero, is on Wednesday, the 3rd of April at 12:30 UK time. Register via the link in the show notes. We'd love to have you with us.
I was just talking about this morning with my team, because we were doing a sort of feedback session from our biannual employee feedback survey. And something that came back very strongly for my team was trust and openness. And we were just talking about how lucky we are to have this, because it's not often that you can have a team where that is rated really highly. But it has enabled us, I believe, to deliver some really innovative stuff, because we trust each other to not only deliver on what we've promised to deliver, but also to call each other out when something's not being done right, or to be able to just let each other get on with it and take that initiative, really.
That's really interesting. Sandrine, I was going to come back to you. It's very easy for a challenge to become criticism and for holding someone to account to come to someone feel attacked by others. And I'm interested in how you keep your collaborative in that positive, constructive space.
Oh, good question. I think it goes back to what we were saying in terms of being open and trusting. So to be able to be straightforward and talk about what we need to talk about. I think it's also the way people package things. So the way you will say something can be taken negatively, but it's having that open space for everyone to be able to speak. And we do see sometimes at meetings, some people are quieter than others, but encouraging that there's no stupid question, no stupid idea. So it's that making it clear from the onset when you have those types of meetings to collaborate that you can be open and that nothing will happen there. And obviously getting that test and learn mindset is also something that's key. But I wanted to come as well upon something that we talked about earlier that is as well important in terms of collaboration is to be organized in a way. Because you mentioned at some point being disruptive. That could be another way of doing things as well. But organized disruption, I would call it that way. And I think as well, as something is how do we engage? How do we bring people in? So ensuring that we're here for one another as well.
So I'm going to put that question back to you about how do you bring people into your collaborations? But before I get into that, while you have a think about it, Michael, I was going to bring you back in here because you actually used the word ground rules, that you set ground rules in what you're doing. And I'm interested in how formally you do that in your collaborations. Is it implied? Is it, you know, a formal part of what you do? And then, you know, do other people do ground rules as well?
For the round tables, we put everybody that was signed up onto an email chain and repeatedly emailed as the event got closer and closer to talk about who was there, what their job role was. And we sort of filled up this handout. And they sometimes were sort of 30, 40 pages long, depending on how many businesses were there and how many businesses wanted to provide some written account of their policies and practices on that issue, and put themselves into the sort of scrutiny of critical friends at the meeting. Some wanted to participate by observing and contributing to the discussion. Other businesses wanted to put their policies and practices forward.
For you, it's quite a formal process that you go through.
There were lots of steps in sort of reinforcing this. And the first page of the handout was always, you know, the ground rules. And then page two and page three were the list of people that were there with job descriptions and bios, et cetera. So that was reinforced many times. But it's easy to say that. You have to actually create that genuine experience and psychological safety on the day. And I think one of the ingredients for success was when we essentially socialized the challenge, the problem. You know, modern slavery down the supply chain, it is a wicked problem and it is manifest in a million ways around the world and not just in far off places, but in the fields and chicken factories of the UK, there are plenty of people in slavery. So it's something about accepting the problem and socializing the problem across all the businesses and across all the NGOs and the campaign groups. This is our shared problem. That's sort of made for really open and honest conversation.
Oh, great. I was just going to ask what you meant by socialize, and you answered my question before I asked it. So the thing that you did say there was about one of the successes of your collaborations was getting people in the room. What were your successes? What helped you successfully get the right people in the room, in the collaboration, working together?
Well, it depends on the project that we're working on, but I would say one could be, there's several ways, basically, but one could be ask for people to volunteer as part of a project because they're passionate about that project. So they're going to bring their passion, their and will get really active, because it's not a matter of getting people in the room, it's getting active people in the room as well. Listening is important, but not just listening. I'd say another is bringing also the right expertise in the room. So if you're going to do something around what I mentioned earlier around diversity and inclusion, should we bring some minorities in, the HR people, having also the right people in the room is important. And getting those different angles. So it's not always top down or bottoms up, is how do we get a mix as well of different levels within the business, different geographies to get those different angles as well. And one last item that might be a little bit more controversial is incentivizing. So if people are going to do some collaboration in addition to their work, are they going to be recognized within the business in terms of what it is that they're doing as well? So those are, I'd say, a few of the methods that we've done. And one thing, again, engaging for me is very important, because people have got to buy in the process in order to get the projects and programs going. Because if it's you just do it, that's not going to work.
Fantastic. And Sarah Jane, I saw you nodding along with that.
Yeah, I mean, that really hit home. I honestly don't think I have anything more to add to that. That was really well said, Sandrine.
I'm going to pick up on something that Sandrine said there. Passion about getting people in the room. And again, I'm interested of how overt you are about looking for people who are really passionate about this, or is it an implicit thing? Your thoughts on that one?
It really depends. When we started the employee resource groups, I mean, it was quite clear who was passionate about what topic and how they would participate in that topic. And going back, I forgot one last thing, is we do have also, when need be, executive sponsors that help as well in terms of bringing the different projects forward.
I do think it depends on the project. If you have, as Sandrine said, something that is in addition to an employee's day role, then you do need to be very explicit about looking for that passion. But if, for example, you are developing products and services, then it's within an employee's day-to-day role, you can be a little bit more subtle about it, because that isn't necessarily a huge motivating factor.
And Osbert, I can get really stuck into these conversations that begin to lose track of time. How are we doing?
We're doing fine for time. But what I wanted to do actually was to pick up on something Sarah Jane said earlier, and yeah, maybe open up the discussion around that. Because Sarah Jane, you had this sort of question about, does a collaboration need a leader or an enabler or whatever? And I thought maybe also unpick that a little bit. How might you describe that situation? And then we could do a little sort of brain trust.
Broadly, I guess, I find this happens most often when you go into breakout groups. So let's take the example of this call. So Osbert and Morag, if there were 30 people on this call, you would have us go into breakout groups. We would have, I don't know, 3 or 4 people in each group, and we would just chat. Some of the groups might then come back with really useful information pertinent to the topic that we're talking about, collaboration. Some other groups may just go off on a complete tangent. They may start talking about something that's really interesting for that group, but doesn't relate at all to collaboration, just because they didn't have anyone there to say, all right, let's get back on topic. So that's really what I meant.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have some ideas you might share with you, but I'd open up that to Sandrine and Michael, and maybe just broaden it out from that specific of some people in a roundtable discussion on Zoom. Any reflections?
I do think in meetings, I often refer to meetings because I see this as working together, but I think there might be that we're collaborating in different pieces. But I think sometimes it needs some wrangling back. As Sarah Jane was saying, we can go in many different directions, and it's ensuring that we are going in the direction that we need to go. That doesn't mean that we can't think out of the box, though.
Thank you. Michael?
We built in that in the breakout groups. Essentially, the 3 hours were spent, 5 minutes from me introducing, you know, this is what we're here for, these are the rules. Please be critical, but be friendly. That seemed to work. And we, you know, had a good rapport with our hosts, and they helped to make the place a sort of safe and comfortable, appropriate place. And then we'd hear from the NGOs or the campaign groups talking about modern slavery or living wage or whatever it was. And then we'd hear from the businesses and go around the table and hear, you know, how they are dealing with these things now. In the second half, we break out into breakout groups. And the job for three or four people to huddle together physically, find a little spot in the room, and the task was to assess the written contributions and decide how well the business performed and what sort of things that they thought the business could do to improve its performance on that issue.
Thanks, Michael. So I guess just to wrap up a couple of things from this conversation and then pass back to Morag to take us into the closing round. But I guess I'm still thinking of one level, picking up on Sarah Jane's point, you know, how do you stop people going off track in a breakout room is like a really sort of practical, straightforward facilitation question. And then I think at one level, it's like give them a really clear task, a really unambiguous task, a task that is doable in the limited time available, given that they may not even know each other and need to have that other time to do some other stuff. And then give them a really clear question or whatever to report back with. So, you know, it's about clarity as a facilitator and giving them something that's doable within the scope. But at the same time, I'm also really conscious about a lot of the stuff that I talked about in the last episode of the podcast around collaboration and picking up very much from Keith Sawyer's book, Group Genius. And this is about collaboration to generate innovation, is that actually very often you don't know what the answers are going to be. And very often this sort of collaborative process is actually stifled by managing the process too closely. And it's about creating the space for ideas to emerge, and that may come about from people going a bit off track, coming at the question from a different angle, finding out actually that the question they've been asked isn't really the most important question. The real question is something else. So as a facilitator of that process, there's the balance to be struck there. And I guess a lot of it depends on what's the purpose of that particular event, that particular intervention.
Thank you, Osbert. So coming towards the end of our time together, and we're really quite keen to make sure that you actually have some time to mentally digest everything that you've just heard. So again, we're just going to slow down for a moment, take a moment to reflect on everything we've discussed and what you've heard. What I'm going to encourage you to do is to think about something you're working on at the moment, or maybe it's something you're about to start, and it might be a specific project, or it might be part of your day-to-day work with a colleague. And I want you to have a think about, based on what you've heard, either something you're going to remind yourself to do or maybe do differently to improve your collaboration and how you work with others. So if you were going to choose just one thing to always remind yourself to do or going forward do differently, what would that be? So Michael, would you like to start?
You've helped me remember the importance of the setup and creating the space and the expectation and the safety and the intention about doing that and being clear about that. I think that's really important. And sometimes I sort of rush, assume that. And I think that's always a mistake, no matter how many people you're seeking to collaborate with.
Thank you. Sarah Jane.
I think quite similarly to Michael, and basically just piggybacking off what Osbert said, what I'm going to try to do is to be a lot clearer in the goal setting when I'm bringing people together to collaborate, just to make sure that we all are heading in the same direction.
Thank you, Sarah Jane. I'm coming to you, Sandrine.
But again, very similar. I think to come back to what Osbert was saying, it's striking the right balance, putting people on the right path, but then leaving that space to be a little bit more disruptive if need be, and having those ideas come out of the box and not being too ambitious in terms of what we'd like to achieve in a given time.
Thank you very much, Sandrine. Osbert, I'll hand back to you just to close the things off here.
We're coming up to the last few minutes. This is the end of our time together today. Thank you so much for coming along and sharing your experience and your insights and, yeah, being part of this conversation, this discussion, and helping us all collaborate so we can make greater progress on sustainability. And there you have it. I hope you enjoyed our Leadership for Sustainability roundtable and that you'll join us at a future session. To make sure you get notified of upcoming events like this, sign up for the Leadership for Sustainability newsletter. You'll find the link in the show notes. Wish you all the best in taking the next step and would love to hear how you get on. If there's anything you'd like to pick up from the discussion, have a chat about, feel free to get in touch. It's been great having you with us. Hope we'll see you again soon.
Yeah, lovely to speak to you all and have a great day. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.